You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
And hey, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yeh.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And welcome to our May edition of our mid-month book news check-in, where Rira and I go over the latest Asian American and Asian-related book and publishing news. As always, Books and Boba is supported in part by our listeners. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a bigger part of our book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba, where as an official Patreon supporter, you gain access to our members-only Discord server. We can chat with us and fellow book club members in real time about all sorts of topics, including our monthly book club picks. And if you join us at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast, Boba Chats, as well as the opportunity to help us pick a quarterly book club pick. And our next selection period, it will be next month. So if you join now, it'll be just in time to help us decide what we'll be reading for the month of May, June, and July, or for our summer.
July.
But yeah, Rira, how's it going? How has your Heritage Month been going?
I mean, I really haven't been doing anything. It's so funny because in our Discord, we were talking about like what is there to do during Heritage Month. And you know, like because you and I live in LA County, there's a lot of things to go to. There's like the LA Asian Pacific Film Festival. There's a lot of like panels at museums. There's night markets. There's like local libraries host stuff. I just have not been outside of my house. I don't know. Like it's around May that I just get. Maybe it's just burnout from previous years where I'm just like really tired. Cause it's just like I'm Asian all year, you know, and we cover Asian books all year. So it doesn't really feel all that special, but I know it's like meaningful to our community. So
yeah,
there's that.
I get it. I think, you know, we've been in the game for like decades at this point. Right. So we've done a lot of, like, we've done our celebrating, and we essentially celebrate every week on this podcast, right? Highlighting books by Asian American authors. But I kind of get it. Like, for me personally, like, I haven't been really going out for the last few years, mostly because of, you know, I have babies at home, so it's kind of hard. We are planning to go to the Smorgasburg on Sunday, which is like a big weekly food festival type thing that happens here in LA, because they're having their annual AAPI market. So a lot of vendors come out. It's kind of a cool time to go and kind of see what's out there. But I do understand what you mean by like this fatigue, especially now that like I think we've reached a point where AAPI or AANHPI identity has become commercialized in a lot of ways. And commercialized meaning that it's become a marketing term, especially this month. So you have a lot of people putting out their Asian stuff this month. But that, like, it's, while great to see, like, visibility is always great, you know, as people who have read a lot of, like, a lot of works kind of railing against, like, capitalism, corporate culture, and just, like, it's kind of hard not to see the, how should I, like, it's hard not to be a cynic about a lot of these things, like, about the visibility, right, and, like, the nature of it, right? And I think it's great because it's, like, I know for a lot of our friends in the organizing space, this is the month where they can get the most traction, right? This is the one month, for, you know, for better or worse, it's the one month that our issues matter and our visibility matters. And a lot of corporations, organizations are scrambling to get their Asian programming in. And so a lot of our friends who are in the spaces of like Asian American consumer products, Asian American event planning, Asian American arts and culture, this is like their biggest month of the year because this is where they get booked for everything every weekend, right?
Yeah, they're definitely they're earning the budget that, you know, they're earning like half their budget or like 90% of it during this month. So I can't fault them for, you know, getting their bag.
Yeah. And that's great. And that's great that they're able to take advantage of like this one month of hyper visibility to like get their bag. On the other hand, it does suck to think about how this only happens this one month. I mean, that's where the cynicism comes in.
Yeah. And, you know, like on the book side, it, like, I'm so glad that a lot of like publishers and independent bookstores, they're like posting, oh, here are some books by Asian and Asian American authors. And nowadays they're like new books. They're books that came out this year or last year. Some of them are like award winning and they came out in the past decade, which is, you know, incredible considering that usually in the past, it's usually been like Joy Luck Club, No No Boy, American Heart. And it's just like, okay, we have more shelf space, which is nice. But at the same time, I'm seeing people who mostly, I guess, like influencers, like bookfluencers, who are just like, ah, yes, this is the time for me to highlight Asian books. And it doesn't really seem all that sincere from my cynical point of view. As yeah. someone who does this podcast like every week.
Yeah, we say that, but we too have our own Asian American Heritage Month themed campaign going on. We're doing our you know, every year we do a book grid so people can, you know, recommend books to each other by Asian and Asian American authors. Rira painstakingly puts together this grid of topics and prompts to get, like, I think you do a really good job maximizing the potential of diverse choices. And it's been really cool to see people participate in that over social media. So yeah, if you're interested in checking it out as well, go to Books and Boba on Instagram, where you can find our this year's
Asian Books Challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did make the board a little bit harder this year. It was pretty fun to see, like, one of the prompts that I had was burn down the system. And it has been like quite fun looking through people's recommendations. And also, like, the other prompt that I put on there was set in the 2000s. And there were people who were confused. People were like, oh, so like it can be anything in like the 2000s, right? Like 2016. And I'm like, dude, no, that's in the 2010s.
You gotta say, I think the more specific way to say the aughts, right? The OOs, I think is probably the,
I mean, it's set in the 2000s. I think that is pretty like straightforward, especially since I put like a Y2K butterfly icon on the board. But, you know, if you want to join this challenge, you know, do whatever you want. There's like, you can interpret the prompts however you want. This is just a way for us to promote more Asian and Asian American books on social media, so people can, you know, find more recommendations.
Yeah.
I've been trying to post books that came out like this year or are coming out later this year. So technically, so far, all of my books have been 2026 releases, which
it wouldn't be a Rira board if you didn't impose some sort of like additional difficulty challenge for yourself.
Yeah, because gotta lead by example, you know.
I do love that. I think the first prompt is a book with food on the cover, which is hilarious because, like, for some reason, Asian American books, it's like all of them have like food on the cover. It's our thing.
It's pretty easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if it has, like, the one that I picked for our board was The Subtle Art of Folding Space by John Chu. And it's literally like dim sum and dumplings on the cover. And I'm like, there's a lot to choose. So, I hope people have fun. I hope people are having fun with the challenge.
As always, let's start off this episode with the latest Asian and Asian American publishing announcements. These are announcements compiled by Rira through sources such as Publishers Weekly and social media. So as always, thanks to Rira for putting these together. Kind of a lighter slate this month, but let's get into it. Rira, why don't you start us off with our first book deal?
So Riverhead won North American rights at auction to The First White Hair by Yasmin Zahir. The book follows a young Palestinian journalist at a left-wing Israeli newspaper in Jerusalem who stumbles into an investigative story when a friend in their circle is arrested. Publication date has yet to be announced. So we are recording this on May 15th, and that means it's Nakba Day, and it's also known as the Palestinian Catastrophe, when Palestinians lost their homes en masse in 1948. And they're still being displaced today, as we can see in Gaza. So obviously seeing more Palestinian writers being represented in American literature is super, like, it's super great to see.
Yeah, I wonder from the description if this is going to be more of a period piece of, like, you know, maybe not history. Like,
I don't know, because the author, Yasmin Zahir, she is a journalist. She is, like, someone who has been published in Jerusalem. And I wonder, like, how much of her own experience she drew from in writing this novel. She's also the author of The Coin, which was her debut novel, and it was about a Palestinian woman living in New York. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It could be another contemporary novel. It can also be a period novel. We don't know, just based on the information that was given to us.
Yeah, sounds like a really interesting premise, and looking forward to learning more about it as the book comes out. But yeah, congrats to Yasmin on the book deal. Okay, next up, Scholastic has bought The Last Dragon Empire, a new middle grade series by Ellen Oh. Book one, The Dragon Thief, follows 12-year-old Duri as she takes over a dangerous job from her father, smuggling dragon eggs that belong to the Princess Dragon Army. Publication is set for spring 2027.
Ellen Oh is a regular name that we announce on this podcast, and yet we have still not invited her as a guest because of scheduling reasons.
It's on our to-do list. Yeah.
It's really also on our to-do list.
Also, I feel like instead of waiting for her publicist to, like, reach out to us, let's just throw an email, right? Like, hey, Ellen, would you like to come on Books and Boba? Because we I'm pretty sure we do know of each other.
Oh yeah, we definitely know of each other. Like, Ellen and I have interacted on social media for a number of years now. But yeah, she, like, Ellen has a lot of middle grade novels, and I know, like, one of the books that she has published already was called The Dragon Egg Princess. So I wonder if this is it hasn't been mentioned as being part of the series, because it says it's part of a new middle grade series. So I'm like, I'm wondering if it's like a what do you call it? Like a,
like an expanded side universe, like a
expanded universe.
Maybe. Yeah.
But congratulations to Ellen. Love seeing her name pop up every couple of months. She's really on it with her book contracts. So it's really great to see. All right. So our next book deal is, in an exclusive submission, Little Brown and Alvina Ling Books acquired It Begins with the End by Samira Ahmed. The novel in verse is set during World War II and starts on the day a young British spy is set to be executed by the Nazis, and reverses back through her memories of a life filled with resistance, courage, and love. Publication is scheduled for spring 2027. So we've had Samira on our show before. I'm trying to remember, like,
yeah, which speaking book it of was. Burning down the system.
It was a book ban book, right?
Yeah, we had her on for This Book Won't Burn. And it sounds like she's following up on that revolutionary spirit in for this new book as well.
Yeah, if you guys want to listen to our chat with Samira, the episode is episode 270. But Samira is the author of Love, Hate, and Other Filters and Internment, and of course, This Book Won't Burn, which is the book that we talked about in our previous episode. So yeah, this is very much in vain with her recurring themes of revolution and young people taking a stand against fascism. Love it. I love that it is her brand, and that she continues with each book to expand that, you know, expand that theme. So great.
All right. Our next book deal, Knopf has bought world rights to Summers in Syria, written by National Book Award winner Shifa Saltagi Safadi and illustrated by Hatem Ali. The picture book is about a girl who experiences her first summer in Syria. Publication is scheduled for summer 2028.
I do love that we're getting more picture books about Syria and Palestine, because obviously there are refugees who have immigrated here, and, you know, they have children, and it's just like a great way. Picture books are just a great way to get kids not just interested in, like, their heritage and culture, but just, like, history as well.
Yeah, especially these days when it's getting harder to travel too, especially with, like, I don't know if you take a look at, like, airplane prices, but, like, there's a certain global conflict going on right now that is making everything way more expensive. And aside of that being, it's also really expensive to fly overseas right now. So if it's going to be harder for us to travel, especially going back to, you know, our mother countries, then it's helpful to have books like this to, you know, at least share in those memories with our kids.
Yeah. And also, I think it's such a quintessential second gen immigrant kid experience to like go back to your motherland for vacations. Like, vacations aren't vacations. Vacations are literally just reserved for seeing Disney extended family.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like when people are like, oh, I went to Europe, I don't know. It's like, I went camping. I went on a summer camp. It's like, not us.
No, we hung with grandma.
We went to go see grandma. Yeah. All right, next up, Candlewick and MIT Kids Press bought world rights to Our Built World, an architectural journey along the Silk Road, written by debut author and architect Fael Levent, and illustrated by architect Debi Zainab Bahidi. Combining travel poems with nonfiction text, this middle grade book chronicles the construction of 10 massive structures built during the glory days of the Silk Road and current efforts to preserve them. Publication is planned for summer 2027. I feel like I would have really loved reading this book as a kid who was really interested in history. And
I remember our world history books covering the Silk Road, but like very superficially. Like, it was the, you know, how trade happened between Asia and between the East and the West. But I don't think we learned about like things like massive structures. And I'm really curious about, I would be curious to read this book as well, to like learn about these things.
But I love the fact that this book is being written and illustrated by architects. And I can just imagine it being like super detailed. And like, if you think about like Istanbul, like cities that were in the middle of the Silk Road, like the architecture must be so interesting. You know, it's a blend of Western and Eastern art, and you know, I think it would be a really good picture book, to be honest.
Yeah. And also, I think it's really cool just to, you know, teach kids about architecture, right? Functional architecture and all the cool stuff that like our ancestors built without like the help of technology or prefabricated, you know, materials. You know, I think it's important to like remind people that we used to make stuff with our hands, right?
Yeah, like not everything used to be like a sad brutalist box that's just made of concrete. Like there was actual like artistry involved in a lot of these buildings.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of these, you know, a lot of the building techniques, you know, they're dying now because there's like no one to pass on the technique to.
Yeah, this book will definitely be out just in time for me to, you know, get for my kids as I try to nurture their love of books and reading. And pictures. At least the pictures will be cool too. So
at least the pictures, yeah.
All right. Next up, Viking has acquired Sheen by Nebula Award nominee Cindy Pond. The book has been pitched as Caravel with a touch of Jack the Ripper. Set in a world where magic users are bought and sold as indentured servants, a young woman lives among a traveling troupe of performers with illegal magic. When her own powers come surging forth, she discovers that she's the only hope against a dark shade draining gifted people of their life force. Publication is slated for fall 2028.
So Cindy Pond is an OG. Like when I think about like pioneers in Asian American literature, she's one of the first people that pop up in my brain. I mean, obviously there are like authors like Amy Tan, who's like, you know, who are like generations before us. But I remember like her book Serpentine was like one of the first Asian American fantasy novels that came out. And her book, well, not Serpentine. That was later. I think it was a different book, Silver Phoenix, I think. But I really got to know her work through her book Want, which came out in 2017. And it was about like climate change in Taiwan. And it was super cool. Cyberpunk.
Yeah, awesome. That was a book that has been on our TBR list for the last almost a decade.
I mean, TBR, right? List for, yeah, you guys. I read it when it came out. So.
Yeah. I mean, definitely Cindy is one of those, like, when we're thinking of reading, like, something speculative, she's always an author that comes up. And really cool to see her, you know, would this be her first fantasy? Has she written fantasy before? Because I know Want was sci-fi, right?
I mean, she's written fantasy before. Like, I think fantasy was more of her thing before she kind of, like, moved sideways to sci-fi and, yeah, speculative.
And I'm not familiar with Caraval.
Caraval is a really popular YA magical series. I never read it. but a lot of my classmates did. So I can't really give you guys a description on it because it's just a book I was never, I don't remember the premise, but I remember as a teen being like, this is not something I'm interested in reading. So I just like never picked it up.
Yeah,
I don't know if that is a good thing, considering that this book is being pitched as Caraval but Jack the Ripper, that's the part I'll hang on to.
Yeah,
you know.
So I'm reading just the brief synopsis. Seems to be a magical fantasy romance around a magical performance, which makes sense since the main character is hiding in plain sight within a circus troupe. So that's kind of cool, kind of like a performing arts story with a serial killer. And magic.
Oh, I think I know why I did not pick up Caraval. It's because a long time ago, I read a book called The Night Circus, and it was also a really popular book that was like all the rage amongst teenagers, and I did not like it. And then Caraval, which came out a couple of years later, was, you know, compared to The Night Circus, and I said, I'm not reading that. So I feel like publishers should be really careful with, you know, comparing with their comp titles. But I get it. It's part of marketing. But
yeah. And whether or not you liked it or not, a lot of people did like those. Right.
Yeah.
So
I'm not the sole audience for every single book deal that comes out. So,
yeah,
good reminder.
Well, hopefully you'll enjoy this book based on a book based on a book you didn't really enjoy. But yeah. Also, but with the added addition of a magical serial killer.
Yeah. Yes. Hanging my hope on the murder part. Yes.
Yeah.
But Cindy, I do like Cindy's writing, so I do want to check it out.
Yeah.
All right. So our last book deal for this month is Viking Bought World Rights to Our Chinatown Market by Jasmine Fang, illustrated by Tai Mai Fong. And the picture book is about a community coming together to save a local beloved Chinese market. Publication is set for spring 2028.
Gotta save those local businesses, like band together, or do a show, do like a dance competition or something, right? But Chinatown's disappearing, like Chinatown businesses disappearing, is a big like issue in today's world. Like, I think there are only a few like true Chinatowns left in this country, right? Like there's New York. I mean, LA Chinatown is barely Chinatown at this point.
Yeah, it's disappeared almost entirely.
Yeah. And a lot of that has to do with gentrification, right? Like, communities of color tend to be really hip. And that's when investment comes in and kind of ruins everything, right?
Yeah. And, you know, like people might think like, oh, what is the purpose of having like a local Chinese market when we have H Mart and 99 Ranch, these big chain supermarkets that cater to Asian cuisines? Well, let me just say, like, it's really like you need special condiments that are only available at those local shops. The closest H Mart to me is like, it's in a more Chinese American enclave, so I feel like they cater more towards Chinese American cooking. And it's like, I would like to have my special Korean things that I can only get in Korea. They've gotten better about it, but it's just like, yeah, that's the reason why local markets are important.
And also just the fact that a lot of people living in like historic Chinatowns have been there for generations, right? And they're there because they had to be there. Like, they weren't allowed to live anywhere else, right? So, like, it does suck when, like, all of a sudden, like, the culture or the land becomes valuable and all the people that have lived there for, you know, decades get displaced because all of a sudden, you know, landlords want to make more money, right? Landlords want to, you know, we got to bring in the new Chipotle.
That's a little sad. Yeah. You know what I would like to see, though, that it has been, if we're talking about commercialized and it's for, like, an Asian palette, I guess, is I want Korean Baskin Robbins to be here in America because they have flavors that we don't have, and it's also the ice cream is way better quality and their names are like really fun. So they have a really popular flavor called My Mom is an Alien, and I'm just like, yeah, like, let's bring back Whimsy to ice creams. And, you know, they have fun collaborations like with Pokemon packaging is really cute. They had like a whole Valentine's Day thing. I'm like, they're so creative with their marketing. I wish they were here.
I mean, if we're on that, I also want Taiwanese KFC.
Oh, yeah, Taiwanese KFC.
The States, because those are the best egg tarts you'll ever get. But yeah, I mean, did you hear that Japanese 7-Eleven has bought like the rights to like a ton of 7-Elevens in the States? And so like we might be getting some Japanese style 7-Elevens here. So I don't know if it'll work.
I don't know if you remember, but Family Mart tried that for years now. And
yeah, I don't know if it'll work because I don't know if you remember Family Mart, the 7-Eleven competitor in Japan and Taiwan, also tried to open stores in the States. They opened a brand called Famima, which is like a Japanese style convenience store. And they were all closed within like 5 years. And they were great. I went there all the time because they're one right next to my work to get like, you know, katsu sandwiches for breakfast and dinner. But like, I don't think those stores work in a land that is built on car travel.
Yeah, I was about to say, you need a walkable city to make that actually work. They're like bodegas, you know? It can't really work without foot traffic. All right, so that is our slate for book deals. Like we said, it's pretty light this month, but we're going to move on to book news. And not a lot, but I do want to bring up a quick one. So Tokyopop is launching a children's imprint. So manga publisher Tokyopop announced their new imprint for young readers up to the age of 12. They're launching this fall. They have a couple of titles that are going to be in English. So they have middle grade graphic novels As Yabu Slumbers by Paulina Palacios, Wild Paws by Victor Nordahl, picture books A Tree Swing to Soar by Chung Yun Ha, and That Girl by Toshiyuki Fukuda, as well as the chapter book Nightmare Library by Taiga Kayama. This is pretty cool as someone who grew up reading mangas, but they were like not geared towards kids. They were more geared towards, you know, teenagers and young adults. So it's nice that kids have their own space now to read mangas that are more catered to them.
I think it makes sense because we have seen the graphic novel market also expand towards younger readers. And I think, you know, comics and graphic novels are a great way to encourage young readers to pick up books, because as I'm learning through just being on, you know, educational social media, when kids are young, they're not reading, they're looking at pictures, right? And so graphic novels are a perfect kind of on-ramp to transition them from picture books to chapter books. And I think it's cool, like Tokyopop is, you know, they're a company that mostly distributes manga. They do the translating too, right? They acquire licenses and they translate and they publish. I think they publish through Penguin Random House. That's their distribution partner. But, you know, a lot of their stuff is geared more towards, you know, adolescent and young adult readers. And so having an imprint that focuses purely on the younger demographic also gives parents an easier way to like, okay, if it's Tokyopop kids, then these are books that are more appropriate for my younger kids. Because as we all know, there's a lot of like questionable materials in even the most like innocuous of mangas.
Yeah, I mean, like if we're talking about OG Tokyopop series, I guess there's Cardcaptor Sakura, and there are some questionable things in the manga version, like age gap romance, just really uncomfy stuff if you think about it. But it's like, oh no, it's just in this fictional universe. We're not thinking about real life repercussions. Also, Fruits Basket, Katakano, those are also series that have problematic elements.
There's some toxic people in those series, right? I'm thinking of like Dragon Ball, the original, like the first 12 volumes, which is about Kid Goku, and it's a fun kind of action adventure. But I do remember that Bulma exists, and her whole thing for the entire like run of that series is like big boobs, right?
Yeah. But I'm looking at their list of works, and there's a lot of original English language manga that they have now. So that's really cool. I'm glad that manga is not just this foreign thing now that you can only get through pirating or smuggling with your circle of friends. It's actually like somewhat mainstream now. I'm kind of jealous, but but also great for reading for younger readers.
Yeah, I mean, as a new parent, I am glad to have more imprints where I can safely acquire titles for my kids that where I don't have to worry about them reading the junk that I read when I was a kid.
I mean, kids are going to read whatever they want, but it is nice. It's probably a good idea to put some guardrails in place so they don't get traumatized.
Yeah.
But yeah, moving on to our, I guess, big piece of news. So BookCon happened a couple of weeks ago, and this was a big deal because BookCon came out after a long hiatus. The last one was back in 2020, and that was a virtual one for, you know, reasons. And the last live one was back in 2019. And BookCon is one of the largest book festivals in America. So BookCon takes place in New York. It's held at the Javits Center. And then you have the LA Times Festival of Books here in SoCal. And it just so happened that like both of them happened to be in the same weekend. So like during that weekend, I was getting content from both sides of the country. And I was just like, oh, like with author friends, I'm like, are you going to BookCon or are you going to LA Times Festival of Books? Like, which one did you choose to be your main like market space? But there were some controversies at BookCon. So there was a lot of overcrowding from what I've seen on TikTok and also like from book vloggers on YouTube. A lot of attendees complained about not receiving ARCs or ARCs running out within 20 minutes. VIP tickets were priced at $400. Signings and a lot of panels were reservation only, and sometimes you didn't even get your reservation honored. So there were problems with that. And a lot of complaints about how BookCon has kind of become like any other convention. Like, it's become Comic-Con, and I think that is like, we talk about hyper consumerism here on this podcast and like how publishing is a business. So there were people who were upset that like the only things you could do at this convention was pretty much buy books and then the parts that they wanted to do, which is, you know, to meet their favorite authors, like it wasn't guaranteed. And there was some drama that happened. So one of the bigger dramas that happened was there was this one TikToker. We'll call her Samira because that's like part of her username. But she went viral because she said Tracy Dion, the author of Legendborn, was allegedly rude to her during signing. And, you know, when further video evidence came out, the backlash against Samira was pretty swift, but this kind of kickstarted this conversation on author reader parasocial relationships, like what you are owed as a reader, what's expected at signings at big conventions versus signings at bookstores, and just the K-popification of authors and, you know, people not being able to respect boundaries. So I did want to talk to you a little bit about this, Marvin, because you and I meet authors all the time, and just like thoughts on authors being more accessible than ever through social media, but that coming with consequences and weird caveats.
I mean, it's a lot of things, right? Like, number one, like, parasocial relationships have always been a thing. Even as long as there's been fandom, there's been parasocial relationships, right? Like, this idea that like this artist is creating something just for you. It's in the nature of how we consume art media, right? Social media has just kind of like blurred the lines more because there are so many more touch points with the artists in general. I think on one hand, when you open yourself up as a public figure and you participate and you engage, like, you obviously open yourself up to more, I guess, scrutiny. But at the same time, like, I think people just don't know how to act these days too, right? Like, because the lines have been blurred so much, people also don't know how to act anymore, right? Like, when media or social media is telling you that everything is made for you, everything is, you know, just algorithm is curated for you. These books are created for your, you know, it's, we see this with fandoms like Star Wars too, right? Whenever, when The Last Jedi came out, people were not happy with the direction they took, even though it was like a novel kind of fresh take on Star Wars. People revolted because they want what they want. And if you don't give it to them, then people will be unhappy in a very loud way.
I mean, one of the big issues that BookCon ran into was that a lot of people were complaining about not receiving arcs or there not being enough arcs. And I just want to remind folks that advanced readers' copies are a privilege. They're not like a God-given right. And I don't know, this mentality of like, I have to be the first person to read this. Otherwise, I'm like, you know, I'm like everything's horrible. Or like, I need to get this limited edition thing before everybody else. And I'm like, okay, what is this pick me culture that has risen?
I mean, how much of this is the need to be the first to create content? Right. Like the first to say, I read this and put this up.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Right. Yeah. I think this whole situation feels like a symptom of like, you know, it's the new American dream now is to become an influencer. You know, a lot of kids these days, their dream is to become a popular influencer or bookfluencer or however, whatever influencer in whatever their chosen hobby or field is. And like in the world of content, speed is everything. It's the reason why we get spoiled on everything the moment like something comes out. Right. Like in today's day and age, like you have to be first. If you're first, then you get the views and then everyone reacts on your content. Right. And it's kind of like it's become a like a lot of things in our lives gamified. Right. You have to like strategize to make sure that you're first or you're the most popular.
Yeah. And a lot of these booktubers, they do like a haul video, right? Saying like, oh, like, look at all the arcs, look at all the swag that I got at this convention. And I just want to say, like, they're not going to read half of those arcs because it's just it's too many. And also just the people who sell advanced copies, like they run to be first in line for these advanced copies and then they try to sell it or they do sell it. You're not supposed to do that. It's illegal. You can't, like, you're literally breaking the law. It's a different world out there in terms of author-reader relationships and readers in public spaces.
Yeah, I guess what we're trying to say here is like, just be cool, guys. Like,
yeah, just be normal, just guys. Be cool.
I think you can't help people who feel like they deserve special treatment. That's just going to be, that's like, you know, as someone who worked in event hospitality before, like you're going to get that everywhere, even the most innocuous of events, like a tiny little event, people are going to think, like, I can't tell you how many times I've worked like a small, like kind of community event. And I've had people say, do you know who I am? You know, do you know who I know? Right. It's like, sir, this is a dumpling festival.
Yeah. And as someone whose, you know, job was to run signings and like help organize them, there are going to be kooky people in line who, you know, push boundaries. They'll like ask for photos when the author specifically said, I'm not comfortable with photos. They'll bring memorabilia or things that, you know, they shouldn't bring to get signed. It's always awkward, or people who just take up too much time in line confessing their love for their author. And I'm like, that's all sweet and all. However, you are not the only person on this line. So let's just be respectful of other people's time and boundaries.
So I guess our request for our listeners, our community is, you know, just don't be that person, you know, like if you ever have the urge to like be a little unhinged, like maybe think about it a little bit, think, is this unhinged behavior, and adjust accordingly, because I guarantee you the event organizers will be talking shit about you the next day if you pull that.
Yeah. And in terms of like authors being rude to readers during signings, obviously they're going to be asshole authors who, you know, think they're like, you know, worth all the gold in the world. Of course, there's going to be really entitled people out there, both in the reader side and the author side. However, in good faith, let's just, you know, be cool And if someone is rude to you, just try to give them the benefit of the doubt. I mean, it's your first time meeting them, usually. If it's not your first time meeting them and it's like a consistent pattern of them not treating you well, then maybe they don't like you. But even then, I'm just like, don't go on social media and fucking put them on blast. Unless they were like super racist to you. Then I mean, I'm like, okay, yeah. Fair game.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a consistent thing, I guarantee you it's known. People already know about these behaviors, right? Because people talk online as well. But yeah, I guess that's to say, I really hope we don't hear about one of these situations where a fan goes off the rails and then them saying, and then we find out that they are a listener, a member of Books and Boba, because we were very disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah. just be cool. You guys.
Just be cool. Yeah.
But that was pretty much it in terms of like Asian and Asian related news. I know like we kind of went off on like BookCon and etiquettes and social media and how that's like being used by authors and readers. But I think that was a conversation we needed to have, because I feel like it has been, I don't know, we've been doing this podcast for almost 10 years now, and we've definitely seen the landscape of book coverage change over the course of those years. So,
and I guess with that, that'll do it for this edition of Books and Boba's Mid-Month Book News Check-In for May 2026. Before we go, can you remind our listeners what book we are reading for book club this month?
Yeah, so we are reading No No Boy by John Okada, and it is the oldest book that we are reading for a book club. This came out in 1957, and the publication history deserves its own book because it went through quite a journey. But it is about a Japanese American in the aftermath of the Japanese American internment during World War II. And No No Boy was a derogatory term that was thrown at Japanese Americans who refused to pledge allegiance to a country that interned them and put them in concentration camps. So this is a book that is always on a list for Asian American studies or literature. So we're getting some foundation.
Yeah,
we're not just reading genre books in this podcast.
Yeah, and what's interesting is this was arguably the first ever like Asian American, like this book predates a lot of our other like classic Asian American literature stories, like Gujola Club, like Native Speaker, because this book was written back in the 50s, like immediately after, like essentially immediately after.
Yeah, it was a contemporary novel when it came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, looking forward to discussing this book with you all. I read this book for the first time 20 years ago in college. And to be honest, I don't really remember much about it besides the overall theme. So it's been really cool to kind of jump back in and like revisit this classic. And it is more than a little disturbing how prescient the themes are still in today's world in 2026. So I feel like, you know, It's gonna be an interesting chat at the end of the month.
Yeah. But,
if you are a Patreon member, we are discussing this book as we read it over on our Discord. And if you're not on our Discord and still want to give your feedback on the book, you can let us know either on social media or on our Goodreads forums. As always, we'd love to include your feedback in our book club discussion episodes whenever possible. But yeah, thanks for listening to Books and Boba, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Ri Ryu and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
co-host the podcast Asians in Baseball alongside Naomi Koh and Scott Okamoto. Asians in Baseball is exactly what it sounds like, a podcast about the Asian and Asian Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander Americans in Major League Baseball. Every week, we break down the highlights of what's going on with Asians in baseball and then take a deeper dive into the Asian and Asian Americans past and present who have shaped baseball as it is today. Whether you're Kim Eng's number one fan or you've never even heard of Hideo Nomo, we've got something for everyone, especially for the Shohei Ohtani stans. Maybe too much for the Shohei Ohtani stans. Listen to Asians in Baseball wherever you get podcasts, part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.
Hey, sports fans. Welcome to Asians in Hockey. You may not realize it, but there's a rich history of Asians and AAPI folks who have contributed to the legacy of the greatest game on ice. From classic legends like Julie Chu and Robin Bawa, to current greats like Lia Lum and Nick Suzuki, and even rising stars like Akane Shiga and Jason Robertson. We'll cover their stories, celebrate their accomplishments, and learn about their impact on the sport of hockey. I'm Nate Nakao, former Beer League player, occasional youth hockey coach, and longtime hockey fan, and I'll be your host as we take a look at the rise of Asians in hockey. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.